We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Footnote to our last half hour tomorrow, we'll have the final Democratic candidate for that June 7th primary. Former Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge will be my guest tomorrow on this program. Over 300,000 Iowans care for an aging parent or loved one, and maybe you are one such family caregiver. Well, the Iowa Governor's Conference on Aging and Disabilities is being held today in Des Moines. Part of the conference, Elaine Ryan speaking on caring for givers, caring for caregivers. She'll also speak about the bill she hopes will make life, health, and medicine easier on both aging Iowans and those who take care of them. Elaine Ryan joins us now, Vice President of State Advocacy and Strategy Integration in AARP's Government Affairs Group. Elaine, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
I want to reach out to family caregivers who happen to be listening. And as I just mentioned, there are plenty of you out there, over 300,000 Iowans. We'd like to ask you, so that we can get a response from Elaine, what changes would help you most? Where do you find the hurdles, the highest hurdles, in the way of giving your family member, your loved one, better care? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Remind us quickly, Elaine, if you could, start us off by who are we talking about when we label someone a caregiver?
It's an excellent question. You know, family caregivers don't identify themselves as such. We know that there are an estimated 40 million family caregivers in the country, but most identify themselves as husbands or wives, mothers or sons and daughters, friends and family, people who actually care for their loved one and help them do everything from schedule medical appointments to actually 24/7 care on behalf of their loved ones.
Mm-hmm. And you support Iowa's CARE Act. Now, this has has come to the Iowa legislature, made it through the legislature into law the last two sessions. But tell us what that act would do and why you support it.
Well, the CARE Act is a common sense piece of legislation, and we hope to see Iowa enact it. It does three things. First, when a loved one is admitted into a hospital, the name of the family caregiver would be recorded in that hospital admission record. And then number two, that family caregiver would be recognized throughout the hospital stay and also be given adequate notice prior to discharge of their loved one from the hospital. And then finally, a key piece is that prior to discharge, family caregivers would be offered an opportunity to perform the medical tasks that they would be asked to perform at home on behalf of their loved ones. So, in mm-hmm. other words, they get a sense to see how it's done and also understand when they might see troubling signs that might cause a rehospitalization of the loved one.
Mm-hmm. So taking over, and this is where it fits into a larger trend, correct me if I'm wrong, Elaine, that the family caregivers, family members are taking over tasks that we had in previous generations given to medical professionals?
That's right. In fact, some of the most powerful advocates have been the nurses, and they actually have cited that years ago, nurses and medical professionals would be performing the types of things that family caregivers are now asked to do at home. I was a family caregiver for my mother and father for 15 years, and I did everything from respirator maintenance to wound care to giving them injections. These are really life and death types of things that family caregivers across Iowa are performing every day. And as you noted at the beginning, 317,000 Iowans identify themselves as family caregivers. And in fact, 65% of those family caregivers have told us that they are performing these types of medical tasks at home on behalf of their loved ones, and they have no training at all to do those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what has driven this change? Well, I mean, why not have a person who is certified, a professional caregiver rather than a family caregiver? What is changing about our medical landscape?
Well, I would say that a couple of things have changed. And in fact, if you count up all the family caregivers in Iowa or the 40 million across the country, there are simply not enough medical professionals to be able to provide that kind of care. In fact, we call them hidden heroes because these family caregivers are really the largest part of the health workforce of this country. They're not given any compensation. If you were to pay those Iowa family caregivers every year for what they do, it would cost $3.9 billion a year. So in short, I think a couple of things have contributed. One is shorter hospital stays. More people are discharged from the hospital to the home more quickly. And frankly, the burden has fallen on the shoulders of family caregivers to provide those complex tasks. You know, one other thing, and I'll note, is that some of our work that's gone on is also with returning veterans. You know, those who have given this country so much through their service are coming back from a war with serious injuries. And now you have family caregivers who are perhaps the family and spouses of those young men and women returning with injuries. They're caregivers. So the need is growing, but the number of paid staff and the cost of it is just not sufficient to be able to support those needs.
What sort of stories have you heard about family caregivers who lack training, and what has gone wrong when they lack the training that you're asking for in this bill?
Sure. Well, we know just statistically that one out of every six people on Medicare today who leave the hospital return to the hospital in 30 days because those readmissions are a cycle of leaving the hospital, then not having adequate care, some health episode, and returning to the hospital. But I'll give you an anecdote that I was so moved by, and it actually moved this couple to take on advocacy for the first state to pass the CARE Act, which was Oklahoma. The returning vet actually came back from three tours in Iraq. He got on his motorcycle, took it out for a spin, got in a terrible accident, was hospitalized for months. When his wife came to pick him up, she tried to transfer him from his truck to a wheelchair and broke his leg. And then he had to be re-hospitalized for months. So they became our lead advocates in Oklahoma, because if she had just been told how to appropriately transfer him to the wheelchair, that second break would never have happened. And we know that's just one example, but I will tell you, in my experience working on this, there are hundreds of such anecdotes that we've heard over the past several years about the need for some simple support so that families have the peace of mind that they are caring for their loved ones safely at home.
The CARE Act, I understand, has become law fairly recently in a number of states. How many states?
Well, so far we're up to 29 states have enacted the CARE Act since 2014. And we have another two states pending governor's signature. Mm-hmm. And we hope that Iowa and the other states will see that this is really a common sense piece of legislation that's really meant to keep that hidden workforce, you know, on the job and some peace of mind that they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, it hasn't made it through the Iowa legislature to the governor's desk. When you look at these other states, the 29 states that you named that have passed the CARE Act, when they debated in their legislatures, what are the sticking points? Are there compromises that need to be made, or what are the sticking points?
Right. Well, you know, I would say that we've been all about compromise across the country on this. I will say that for the vast majority of those states that have enacted, this has been almost a unanimous adoption in these states. Wyoming passed it earlier this year, and it was through the advocacy of a state legislator there who had been a caregiver for her husband, her father, her mother, and three uncles. They got it through the legislature. So I think once people understand that, you know, recording the name, giving adequate notice prior to discharge, and then just giving everyone a simple instruction of those medical tasks, I think once they understand what we're actually talking about, a lot of the opposition falls away. Not to cloud the discussion, I do think that, you know, at first some of the hospital systems see it as a burden. Other argue that they do it already. And our hope is that a CARE Act would actually create a uniform experience for everyone mm-hmm. who is discharged from the hospital. Whether or not you're caring for a child or caring for an older loved one, everyone deserves to have some just basic instructions. So there are different things that we've done. There are video instructions. There are hands-on instructions. There are different ways hospitals have chosen to implement the law, but no one says it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Elaine Ryan is with us of the AARP, talking about what she feels are needed changes in Iowa's law that have been enacted in a number of other states, 29 she names, on laws concerning changes of caring for caregivers and what caregivers need to have changed is according to Iowa law. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Elaine, the AARP's state scorecard on long-term services and supports for older adults, people with physical disabilities and family caregivers, as I said, from the AARP, found that Iowa, our state, was fourth in the nation when it came to quality of life, quality of care, a nice ranking there from your organization, the AARP, for the state of Iowa. That doesn't really speak to the need for change then, does it, if we're already at the top of the list?
Well, kudos to Iowa for having invested in a lot of quality of care and quality of life over the years. I will note that same scorecard ranked Iowa 20th in the nation for support for family caregivers and 38th in the nation for effective transitions. Mm. That could be from the hospital to the home, from rehab to home. In fact, I think as we are trying to review the scorecard, Iowa actually has ranks 51st in the nation in terms of the percentage of people who have nursing home stays and their ability to transition safely back to home. So lots of work to be done, lots of things to be proud of, but we hope that the CARE Act could help reduce hospital readmissions and actually create smoother transitions from hospitals to rehabs to home. Mm-hmm. Anybody, and again, I've been a family caregiver. My parents, God bless them and God rest their souls, they went through multiple hospitalizations and rehospitalizations. And my brother and sister and I, we did our best we could, but none of us were medical professionals. So I think some of those numbers in Iowa reflect the fact that there's a way to go to improve things. And what I know about Iowa and your ability to kind of get things done with a quality focus is that I'm very optimistic it can happen.
Elaine Ryan of the AARP with us. On April 1st, our Medicaid, Elaine, was switched to private management. I'm wondering how this fits into the discussion that we're having. For instance, the roles that the managed care organizations have when it comes to caregivers.
Right. Well, Iowa is one of many states that are actually moving to managed Medicaid long-term care. And I think one of the biggest hopes in that new transition is that family caregivers and consumers are a part of that conversation. You know, part of the, and I understand this, but part of the purpose of actually moving to managed care is to save money. Well, we understand the need to save money on that care, but we also know that the quality of care could be put at risk unless we are supporting family caregivers at home who will be the person who's basically caring for that loved one when they leave the system.
Mm-hmm. And so, through the case managers.
Correct, but even more sometimes, and what we found in an AARP study several years ago, we entitled it Home Alone, because many people who leave the system have no one to care for them or provide advice. So we're hoping that a couple things happen as Iowa moves to managed care, and that is, one, there's a consumer focus, so we understand the quality outcomes. And two, Iowa has a pretty high rate of nursing home usage. And we know it's a third the cost to serve someone at home than it is in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. So our other hope is that we can kind of rebalance that a bit.
Well, what does that tell you, that we're relatively dependent on nursing homes? What does that tell you about our caregiving for older Iowans?
Well, I think what it says is that if we know in national surveys and in Iowa surveys that 90% of people want to live in their own homes and communities for as long as they can, that we have a system that isn't built and aligned to meet those consumer needs. So I think what it means is that nursing homes, you know, 20 years ago were the only option, and home and community-based care across the country is the best option. So we're hoping that that kind of managed care waiver will help people migrate back to home and community-based care where people want to receive their care.
Right. And this act would do what you're saying is, it seems, you know, educate the caregivers so that they feel more comfortable having an elderly person, a sick person at home, rather than being forced, at least in their minds, to go to a nursing home.
Right. And, you know, I want to just say this, that I certainly have had family members who truly could no longer care for themselves, and nursing home was their only option. But for the vast majority of individuals, that care can be delivered at home. And in fact, Iowa ranks 41st in the country of the percentage of nursing home residents with very low care needs. Mm-hmm. So that just signals statistically there are probably people who don't need to be in those nursing homes and could be cared in their own homes or communities, and should be.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about serving more people at home rather than, for instance, a nursing home, what type of community-based services need to be in place if you're in a small community, a larger community? What services need to be built up in order to make people feel that they have the adequate support right in their a local community?
Right. Well, you know, communities are just a key hub for family caregivers, and a couple of things need to be in place. You know, you do need to have some respite care. You need to have some time off to be able to take a break from those caregiving duties. So a good network of respite care services. You know, the other, and that would just be a relief, you know, some place that someone could come in and spell you for a couple of hours or vice versa. You could actually take your loved one to some setting where they might be able to socialize. You can get a break and so forth. I will say that one of the big, big things that happens with family caregivers is they let their own health deteriorate. Because they're so focused on their loved ones, they don't even take out time for themselves to go to the doctor. So some of those kinds of supports are necessary. And as you may appreciate, people are looking for services. Where do they get those services? So an adequate system to understand what's available to me. And, you know, finally, I would say that we know out-of-pocket cost for family caregivers to do everything from home modifications to changing showers and doorways and ramps and all the rest fall squarely on family caregivers to shoulder that cost. And I just wanted to note that Senator Joni Ernst actually has supported a federal piece of legislation, a caring a credit for caring act that would provide family caregivers across the country with a $3,000 tax credit to offset some of those costs. So, you know, we have a long way to go to figure out what's needed, but those are just a few things.
Mm-hmm. Not a long way to go to the end of this hour, unfortunately. Thank you, Elaine. We have a minute or two left. Back to the legislature here in Iowa, which would debating the CARE Act, which you've been talking about here. Are you reaching out? Do you have hope? Do you have contacts with Iowa legislators? The leaders here, should we expect that in the next legislative session in January 2017?
Well, you know, we have a terrific state office led by Kent Sovereign in AARP Iowa and a talented team of staff there who are working with state legislators to try to gear up for 2017. I'll be in Des Moines tomorrow and Wednesday at the Governor's Conference to talk about the CARE Act, other caregiving supports, with the hope that some of the 29 states that will be there that inspired and enacted the CARE Act will be joined by Iowa next year.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, do you have this statistic offhand? I've always thought, you know, Iowa is one of the oldest states in the country in terms of our population. Are we still in that ranking?
Yes, you are. In fact, it's Iowa, Pennsylvania, and Maine.
Okay, so we're in the top three in the nation.
Yes, you are.
Okay, are we number one?
Well, you know, Iowa's always number one.
Very good answer, Elaine.
I will just leave it at that.
Okay, you scored a bullseye with that last one, Elaine.
Okay.
Thanks, Elaine Ryan, Vice President of State Advocacy and Strategy Integration in AARP's Government Affairs Group. Thank you so much, Elaine.
Oh, thank you so much for your time today.
As I mentioned, coming up tomorrow, we'll have the last of the four Democrats who are vying for a chance to face U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. And we'll be talking with Patty Judge tomorrow on this program. Hope you'll join us for that half-hour discussion. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and also help from Lauren Knutson. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.